Good morning. You're with Margaret O'Connor on Community Matters. You know, community really does matter every day, every battle. I just realise how much the real community matters. So welcome, everybody, to another session of Community Matters. I'm sitting here enjoying a little quiet chat with Ned, our garden guru. Welcome to the show, Ned.
Good morning, Margaret. Great to be here.
Ned, it's a beautiful day out there. I always let people know, just in case there's some of my listeners still in bed, afraid to find out what's happening out there. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous autumn day. Wonderful, wonderful day for gardening. But what's been going on in your life, Ned?
Well, a little bit busy this week. Tomorrow we begin filming at the Armidale Racecourse.
Amazing. What you're in a movie?
No, well, it'll be a 3 to 4 to 5 minute little film. The Armidale Racecourse Committee is the organiser of the New England Garden Festival.
Yep. So this is the festival that inaugurated last year.
That's correct.
At the racecourse.
And that'll be on again this November.
Ah, so the presses will start flowing in soon to promote it, I imagine.
Well, the New England Garden Festival organisers have a vested interest in beautifying the grounds at the racecourse.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be a great boon for its organisation and beautifying and glamouring up the place. Anyway, the committee wants us to beautify the surrounds, and primarily their first priority is the finishing line and the fence of the racecourse, about 100 metres either side of it.
Right.
So all very exciting. We've got lots of great ideas.
Mm.
And tomorrow we start filming. We've got a drone.
Oh, fabulous.
And all sorts of exciting things like that.
So just tell us a bit about the finish line. Why the finish line? Why not the sort of pavilion area or something like that?
The races, race that leading up to the end and afterwards, is televised on TV and social media.
Oh, okay.
So every time that is played on social media, it's advertising and promoting the race course.
Oh, okay. I get it. It makes a lot of sense then, doesn't it? Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, I was. We were just chatting off air, and I was remembering when I kind of started to glam up some pony club horse jumps many, many years ago now, and what fun we had. Sort of, it just makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. Yes, it certainly does.
And I've been to a few functions at Flemington too, and the way that it's quite inspiring, the way they the beautiful landscaping at some of those pretty fancy city race courses.
And it'd be great for the attendees as well.
You know,
a beautiful place that sets a great mood, a feeling of excitement. Yes, let's go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, when people go to the races, they generally dress up. And so thus I think the race course should dress up as well. They should put on a beautiful flowering scene. So it'd be great fun. I got a little video sent to me. I had a practice last week and the filmer sent me a little video.
Yeah.
And I started to play it and bang, immediately I stopped it. I thought, oh, God, is that really me?
It's hard to see yourself on film, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've got 5 days. How can I improve in 5 days? And I realised, well, it's not enough time to go to Thailand for a facelift. I can't lose 14 kilograms in 5 days.
You don't need to lose 14 kilograms.
You didn't say I didn't need to have a facelift, though, did you, Margaret?
We'll talk about that later.
Anyway, I knew I had to smile more, and I had to be more gestures and more dedication to it.
Yeah.
So after this, I'm going to go and practice at the finish line we go.
I've got to tell the listeners that Ned's sporting a fabulous new haircut, as am I, of course.
Yes, yes. Well, I went to my hairdresser and I said I want a number 4 or a number 2 as usual.
Yeah.
Because it's getting winter, I'm going to have a beanie on.
Yeah,
so when
yeah.
I pull it off, I don't want to look like the hair's all over the place.
Yeah.
And she refused this time.
Oh.
She said, no, if you're going on film, we're not doing a number 2 or a number 4. To Deborah Goose, if you're listening, thank you for the haircut.
No, we can't talk about that.
Ah.
but we're glad that, as in my hairdresser, who shall, of course, also remain nameless, my hairdresser tells me what I'm getting.
Yep.
I think it's better that way. But so, I've got to tell the listeners, Ned's looking pretty spivvy and he's getting ready for his debut. So what's going to be on the video that you're making?
Well, basically myself and only myself. But then there will be photos of what we think we're going to do, what the finish line should look like
yep.
and why. the reason why. What have we got there and how can we improve it and what can we get rid of?
Okay.
So as well as the finishing line, very important, the entry as you go in, because the entry sets the first impression and that is so important for the rest of the day. So one great idea that I have is that the fence which runs along the boundary on the highway there opposite Taz, a lot of traffic, a lot of noise, it's pretty damn ugly. We want to throw up or clothe the whole fence with climbing roses.
Oh, so we're going to have a mini, mini kind of, you know, fancy pants race course.
Yeah, I want like a tapestry. And that will insulate the ground, the race course grounds from the road. And also hopefully it'll become a bit of a tourist attraction because when people drive past that area or walk, there'll be this just tapestry of beauty.
You know, that's something that has always appealed to me. I remember many years ago having a conversation about shrubs and I'd always found shrubs kind of dull, you know, but of course the gardening world came alive for me when I moved from the city to the country. And, you know, to me shrubs was sort of something like a bilia sitting on its own, kind of looking a bit sad in the front garden of a suburban house. I still don't really like bilia, but anyway, I'm sure that's immoral to dislike a plant, but anyway, what this friend said was, oh, no, you know, it's like a tapestry. You've got this colour and that colour and you know, they all blend together and it's a beautiful picture and suddenly that whole concept of plants sort of being art objects kind of came alive for me.
Well, it's on my business card, Alexander Pope. He was around the 1870s, I think, or maybe a bit earlier.
A bit earlier. He was one of the Augustan
1780s.
Augustan poets, And he was a wonderful. Well, I'm not going to steal your thunder. Sorry, I know about Pope.
Well, so he says that all gardening is really a landscape painting, which I think is beautiful.
Yeah, and if anybody wants inspiration, just dig up some Alexander Pope and have a read. It's fabulous. Wonderful poem on coffee, the aroma of coffee. But we're talking about gardens. And, Ned, it's winter. Like, are we going to despair until spring or what?
Well, we're forecast frost this weekend, ones and noughts and ones.
Right.
So that'll be interesting. And last week we talked about what plants flower in the winter. But coming up now, all the trees are losing their leaves, the deciduous shrubs, et cetera, et cetera. And so basically what you're left are the bare bones of a garden. And it's a great time to reanalyze and re-look your garden design to see is it still beautiful through the winter. Very important.
So we shouldn't despair about the sort of loss of leaves in our climate in winter. We should actually use it as an opportunity. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah. Now you work out, am I doing my garden design correctly or incorrectly? So the structural or framework of a garden is just ultimately important. It creates the bones of the garden where everything else will hang from. So your perennials and the thing and annuals, perennials, bulbs, they're all just there as a secondary feature.
So, okay, righto. So they're the frills.
Yep.
So how do you go about? I've heard this before, and I've had, you know, that you need structure. But how do you do that as a landscape designer or a gardener?
Well, evergreens. I believe you need at least 50 to 70% of your plants to be evergreen. Many people do this in different ways. Generally, people have hedges. They can be hedges against the fence. And hedges at the edge of a garden or multiple plantings through a garden.
Right. So how would you – so the hedges at the edge would enclose the garden, I suppose, and give a sense of, you know, sort of definition to the space within.
Correct, Margaret,
But what about this – how do, take it from there for me. I mean, I'm – an ingenue. What next? You've kind of filled in the edges?
Yep. The whole thing is to simplify your design. The more simple it is, the easier it is to maintain and visually far more attractive.
Right.
Now, working in the nursery, many people come in and they want, for example, a tall hedge to hide the fence.
Mm-hmm.
But and they're thinking, oh, I'll do a combination of things.
Mm.
Or on each boundary, the three or four boundaries of your garden house, they may be different. Well, this is completely all wrong.
Oh.
So a normal garden or a house will have a fence of three ways around the garden.
Right.
You should only have it. Oh, sorry, that fence is one colour generally, made of one material.
So you say your classic paling fence or your colour bond fence, perhaps.
That's correct.
Right.
And
we're not talking about the front fence at this stage. We're talking about the three other sides.
And it can include the front as well.
Right, okay.
It depends if you want to hide away your life.
Mm.
So because they're the same material and same colour, you should have the same plant all the way around.
Mm.
And if you think that's a bit over the top, well, then I say back to a customer or a client, well, we could paint that fence there pink, the one on the back we could change into wood. Mm. The one over here we could have beautiful metallic steel.
Yeah.
No one would do that.
How would you love that? Yeah.
Mm. So the same principle comes around when you're planting a hedge.
But won't that be boring?
Well, no, because it's your basic backbone to the garden.
Right.
And I just sold the analogy. You're not going to paint all different colours all around your fence unless you're really artistic.
Yeah, okay.
So it's exactly the same principle. You keep it easy, you keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
That one hedge you maintain all at one time instead of different times during the year. Another analogy, say in a large garden bed, people like to throw everything they can at it.
Mm.
I want a bit of this, I want a bit of that, I want a bit of this. And all design principles somehow just fly out the window on the way to the nursery.
Yeah.
So again, your house, not the fence, your house will basically the same material, wood, brick, and it's all the same colour. The trimmings around your windows will all be the same.
Mm.
The roof will always be the same colour and material. You suddenly get the idea here?
Mm. I think we're talking consistency and unity and not kind of driving yourself insane with a discordant jangle.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So people forget about this basic principle.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go inside the house, to extend this story, the walls generally are the same colour, unless you have a feature wall. You have a dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
All the chairs are generally the same.
Yeah.
Generally, if you're eating, the plates will be the same. The cutlery is all the same.
Mm.
You'll have the same curtains, the same colour, same material.
Mm.
You go to the kitchen, all the cabinets are the same.
Mm.
Made of the same material and the same colour.
Mm.
So, again, it's simplicity. You would never believe to paint every cupboard in the kitchen a different colour.
Yeah, I've considered it, but no.
Well, thankfully you said no. I mean, so there you go. So smaller shrubs, you need to create structure within your garden beds.
Right. So hang on. We're looking at – I'm just going to keep you in line here, Ned.
I love it.
First of all, you want a sense of enclosure, so you've got a uniform hedging or some foliage arrangement at the edges.
Correct.
Now what?
Well, we have the skeleton or the bones all the way around. Ultimate structure. It looks clean and nice.
Right. Yep. Okay.
So now we get to the smaller garden beds.
Mm.
Generally, people will do a little hedge on the edge of the garden.
Right.
A low hedge. Mm. And
I saw Monty Don's show on just briefly on Sunday. Don's a gardening. I mean, as of course you know, gardening superstar. Over at Versailles and Villandry, and looking at all those tiny little box hedges around their sort of fake potager, which is totally ornamental vegetable garden with sort of lined with. So we're talking about those little tiny box enclosures?
Yes and no.
Mm.
So we also, instead of having a little, what I call a sheep shoot or an ant's trail hedge at the front, it's good to extend them into the garden, and that creates more form as well. So in a garden bed, if you didn't want to have that little hedge at the front, you could get the same plant, but plant them multiple places, throughout that garden bed, and that's creating structure as well.
Right,
and a little bit more unique.
Yeah.
Instead of the run of the mill.
And am I right in assuming that we are now talking evergreen?
Oh, yes. Everything today we can talk about evergreen, yeah.
So we've got to have evergreen in our climate because you don't want your structural elements kind of bare and twiggy all through winter.
Oh, exactly. Yep. Right, the bulbs haven't come up. Mm. The annuals are still starting to mature before it gets too cold, like pansies and violas.
Mm, mm.
And all the deciduous shrubs. Yeah, yep.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So there are a few candidates. To do an edging or to do a sort of in a diamond shape, three deep, say five wide,
right,
in plantings, and that gives the design more coherence and an element of more beauty.
Can you just break that down a bit? So you're saying, yes, have your edge,
yep,
but make it a deep edge that goes into the bed at in places.
Yep. Well, now you're throwing out the hedge, the one at the front. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make it more interesting, putting them through the garden bed.
Oh, okey-doke, right.
Yep, yep.
Okay.
So that wasn't very clear. But so there are some great candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Lavenders.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest selling plant in the nursery.
Are they long enough lived for this purpose?
It depends on what lavenders you use and how you maintain them.
Right, okay.
I have a little bit of a lavender story.
Mm.
Very popular is English lavender.
Mm.
But English lavender actually doesn't come from England.
Ah.
It comes from France.
Oh, didn't know that.
And French lavender is not actually French.
Mm.
It comes from Italy.
Oh, okay.
And Italian lavender is not really Italian. It comes from the lower Mediterranean and the north of Africa.
Oh.
So it all gets rather confusing. So really, but what you're seeing in when you've got a long line of French lavenders, they're actually Italian.
Right, and
but the company has labelled them French.
Yeah, they do in modern times. But what's the significance of this in terms of getting your structure back into the garden? Is there one that's preferable to the other?
There is. The most popular by far, 95% of the market or more, are the French lavenders, which are really Italian.
Yeah,
they flower more during the winter, through the whole year. I'm sorry, but because they repeat flower so well, people are reluctant to prune them back.
Right.
So within 2-3 years, they're tall, leggy, ugly, and you've got to rip them out.
Mm. Well, I have a little bit of dead French lavender in my sort of, in a bit of my so-called garden.
Yeah.
And I was about to rip it out, and then I noticed all these tiny little birds, you know, just having so much fun in there, and I couldn't bear to do it.
But, sparrows?
No, little finches.
Right. Mm. Mm. Fantastic. Yeah. Mm. My favourite is the English lavender.
Mm. I think I might know why. Is that because of that pungent aroma that it has?
That's correct, yeah. This is the one which you associate with lavender fields in Europe or, say, in Tasmania.
Uh-huh.
And this is the lavender where you extract the beautiful oil.
And it's also it's the one where you can make the little lavender bags and things like that if you so desire.
Correct. Yeah. Now, the great advantage of the English lavender is it only flowers during summer, but it's a long flowering season.
Mm-hmm.
When it finishes flowering, you just cut it back, even roughly, and you have this, like, perfect Miss Muffet's tuffet ball.
Oh, so, and we like balls for structure, don't we?
We do, exactly. So you'll have these harmonious balls all through deep into your garden, or possibly you still want to do it at the edge.
Right.
And it's a lovely steel grey.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're only pruning once a year, it doesn't get leggy or ugly, and they could last up to 8 to 10 years. There are two examples of this that I have seen. One was on the outer side of a dam, huge dam, and they planted them maybe 5 deep and hundreds in length. It was just stunning.
Mm.
Another one was the garden I used to work with, and they had a long road leading up to the homestead, and tracking around it and then joining up again at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And either side of this long drive were lavenders.
Yeah.
And I remember one year pruning them back into beautiful balls.
Mm.
It took me 3 days.
Yeah.
But there probably were 5,000-6,000 of them. And en masse, they just look superb.
In balls.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So they can look just as attractive without the flowers as when they had the flowers.
And I guess that's what we're actually talking about, aren't we, when we're talking winter gardens and structure, is you've got to be able to enjoy the kind of geometry of the garden is, I don't know if geometry is the right word, in winter, especially in our climate, because we do have a long period in each of our years where it is winter. It's cold.
The most used plant in hedging, low hedging, are the box or the buxus.
B-U-X-U-S, isn't it? Buxus.
Beg your pardon?
I'm just trying to spell it so that people can go to the...
B-U-X-U-S.
That's what I said. Right, good.
Yep. Or commonly known as box.
Box, yeah.
Now, there are three main buxus. There's the Buxus sempervirens, which is the English lavender. There's the Buxus microphylla, which is the Japanese. And then Buxus microphylla, which is the Korean.
Right, and they're very different, aren't they?
The English has a totally different leaf, a thinner leaf, and for me it's a dull green. It's not very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese is a higher one. Probably you can keep it to about 1.5 to 2 metres.
And it's a bit more vigorous in its growth.
Yep, yep.
Anyway, go on.
And then you have the microphylla, which is the Korean, and you keep that down to about a metre. Again, all of these can look stunning if they're in... if they're pruned loosely into balls. It provides that harmony and rhythm through a garden. It's like telling, not just telling a story, but creating a song. The downside of the buxus is that they get severely hit by frost. It doesn't burn the leaves, but it turns them what I think is a very ugly orange brown.
Okay.
So they'll be hit from the first frost. And they won't start to regrow until nearly the end of spring.
Right.
So in our climate, in Armidale, you probably have a whole lot of ugly for nearly 6 months.
Well, it's not what we want.
No.
What are we going to do about that now?
Well, there's a greater alternative.
I had a feeling.
And this one is Unonymous. I think I said that correctly.
Yeah.
Green did. Rocket.
Ah.
There's also a smaller one called, can't quite remember, I'm getting old to forget that, but Green Rocket. Oh, Tom Thumb is a smaller one.
Right.
So the Green Rocket and the Tom Thumb remain this rich, beautiful mid-green throughout the whole winter. It's not burnt in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
And also the better advantage is that it begins to grow again at the very beginning of spring.
Right.
So that way you get another 3 months of growth. And there's no ugly whatsoever.
And if you, and if you're going for height and you want that, unonymous.
Mm.
Unonymous. You're going to get that height to that height sooner.
Because
you don't lose that 3 months of growth if you happen to have a frost that really knocks your hedge or knocks your balls. So to speak.
So even in Europe now, especially in England, this is the plant they use for hedging.
Right.
So if you're thinking of creating a new hedge, go for Green Rocket or a low one, Tom Thumb.
Right, okay. But, I mean, that doesn't mean you can't have box, but it's just that you've got to accept that the box is going to take that knock.
With the
frost, or it may well do. Yeah, I mean, box is still incredibly popular around this our region, isn't it?
Well, people really. Well, you go to England, or you go to Germany, or even the top of France, you'll see box hedges everywhere.
Yeah, but I think one of the things I, learned intellectually, not practically really, is that. Well, practically as well, is that whilst people say, oh, yes, we've got an English climate, we actually don't, in the sense that our temperatures can go from really hot to really cold in a 24-hour cycle, which is not something. It's actually a milder sort of variation in the Northern Hemisphere. Would you agree
That's
with that?
That's correct, yeah.
So it's actually a much rougher ride for our plants, even the ones that love a cool climate. They're having to just imagine a delicate lady or something, you know.
Well, the other day I wrote a blog and sent it off to a Facebook group. Where are they? I think they're in England on delphiniums.
Mm.
And so in this one I was stating, look, we get really cold temperatures, minus 8 sort of things that can be quite normal. And then we hit a 30 or even a 32. Mm. And these are the extremes that I have to deal with. And so this is my story.
Yeah.
We're in England.
Never.
You hit 24, 25 and it's a heat wave.
That's right. And, and they're fading away at 24 or 25.
And they get rain much more often than we do.
Yeah, so they've got that relief, whereas we can have a long period of dry, a long dry spell. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Actually, I'm just going to digress for a moment. First time I went to England, I was quite young, and a friend who was already there spoke to me on the phone and she said, "Now, don't let anybody put you down for being an Aussie or a colonial." She said, "They'll try," but she said, "We're tough."
Yeah.
"We're tough." And, you know, they start to fade away at when it gets to 25 degrees and we're just going, "Yeah, so bring it on." Mm. And she said the British really appreciate that resilience that Australians bring to the workplace.
And the resilience that we need in the garden.
Mm. And it's a similar picture. Just imagine those, but it does mean our plant selection has to be a little bit more canny than, say, Rosemary Veery's or some of those really traditional English gardeners.
Well, we have the benefit here that we can use the cold climate plants from Northern Europe and Mid-Europe, and we can also use the Mediterranean plants because many Mediterranean plants are totally frost hardy.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned rosemary. Rosemary is one of my favourite candidates for hedging or putting into balls through the garden.
So that's, we're talking about Rosemary Veery, V-E-R-E-Y?
Yes.
Oh, you're talking about rosemary the plant?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
What did you think of us?
Oh, we were just talking across purposes. Interesting. Rosemary Veery, I was referring to her as a garden personality.
Ah.
And you were talking about the bush.
Yes. Well, we'll come back together now.
We will.
Yeah. So there are lots of different rosemaries. Mm. In potages, they work beautifully. It's a hedge around vegetable gardens. Mm. It gives you an enclosure or a framework, again, which will hide the times that there are no vegetables growing when it's asleep, when the ground is asleep, so it's wonderful. I use them again, done into balls through the garden.
Right.
They look great in a singular fashion or better in, say, a grove. What I'm talking about, you know, is a 3 deep, 5 wide.
Right.
That makes sense, like in a diamond fashion.
Oh, okay, right.
Not a straight line. So what you're doing is creating depth.
Yeah.
And framework and structure that way. And I love rosemary because they flower in winter and early spring. And my number one favourite is Blue Lagoon, which has a beautiful peacock blue flower.
Ah.
People do not use rosemary enough. When people come to the nursery, I want them to make a hedge or to put in the garden, and I say rosemary, and they're sort of...
What do you think that is? I've had rosemary plants just turn up their heels and just bang die, sort of.
How old were they?
Well, I don't really know, but they probably were just kind of dying of old age. And I've got one in a pot, which, you know, I actually don't know how much to water it, but it's got, I think I must have forgotten for a while because it's got a sort of half brown sort of leaves or spikes. You know, the leaves aren't really leaves.
Well, I have to charge you with neglect there, Margaret.
Yeah, I think so.
We're in the garden a lot, they like good drainage. And basically in Armidale and New England, we have relatively good drainage.
Right, so rosemary should be
a safe
bet.
Or you can do it in a pot. So I do them both. I do them in the pots and I do them in the ground.
Yeah.
I think people turn up their nose at rosemary because they think it's just too ordinary.
Oh, no.
You know, they want something really beautiful and they don't really understand that the flowers are just beautiful and wonderful and they're just covered in bees.
Well, there's two aspects to rosemary I think that we haven't touched on. One is that they're going to bring bees into the garden and they really, really, really do. So all of your pollination is kind of encouraged by that. But the second thing I would have thought was that rosemary is really good for you. It's one of the – it's a very aromatic and helpful culinary.
It's supposed to be a calming herb. People, when cut them and put them in little pillows underneath there, larger pillow when they go to bed.
Well, the other thing you can do is cut it up very fine, chop it up and put it in your salad and stuff like that. I mean, you wouldn't want to eat a rosemary sort of branch necessarily. You'd have to be chewing pretty hard. But if you cut it up very fine, it's actually really, really good for you.
My next candidate is the Raphiolepis, which people call the Indian hawthorn.
Right.
Okay. Now, this can be used against a fence if you're using the original one, which is Raphiolepis indica.
Mm-hmm.
I have one great one in my house. It's probably about 12 years old, and I've actually pulled off a lot of the branches and left bare stems and made clouds of leaves on the ends. And it's really quite extraordinary. Tough as guts, loves the frost, loves the drought. Beautiful flowers in spring, white flowers, and again, attracts every bee in the neighbourhood. Now they have new varieties. The best one is one called Snow Maiden. Right. Lovely, big, rich green leaves. And really, you don't have to prune it ever. It's just a perfect little blob. There's a slightly taller one called Snow Maiden, and it needs probably an annual prune only once.
Right, right.
Now, there's some for the garden, so you can either use them on the edge or through a garden. Right, and so then, say you've got them planted through a garden, then you can put your perennials and your annuals and your bulbs and intermingle through it.
And when you talk about bulbs, are we talking the same size or different sized bulbs?
Well, just for example, if you did lavender and rosemary, they'd all be the same. All be the same type of bulbs. You can sow in other ones which are slightly taller, like the Raphiolepis, and you can ball those into a higher one.
Right.
There was one garden I went to and they hadn't had any work done for a couple of years and some event was coming up. So my partner, my past partner, and myself, and it was mainly natives, we just balled everything.
Oh, right.
So it was all in different heights and it would just look stunning. Natives love it when they're pruned well because they get very leggy and the more you prune them, the more flowers you get.
Right.
And also the close-knit branches provide a safe haven, sanctuary for little birds and insects. So it's a win all around.
It's fantastic. So have you got any, because everything you've suggested so far is exotic, have you got any recommendations for structure plants or hedging plants that are native?
Well, I just mentioned that you can ball.
Yeah.
Or you can hedge. Or you can do some sort of shape through nearly all natives.
Right.
Bottle brushes are great.
Right.
So they can be tall bushes. Smaller ones can be grevilleas, wistringes, philothecas, they used to be called areostomans. But they're absolutely wonderful, philothecas, crow ears, emu bush, eremophila, basically anything, absolutely anything. Oh, prostanthera, stunning to do.
Prostanthera.
They're the local, the mint bush they call them.
Oh, I've seen.
You can have them in purple, pale mauve flowers or in white. And people really don't notice them around. Until they're in flower. Then when they're in flower, it's a huge rush to come into the nursery. I want one. I need one. I've got to have it today.
That's right. Yeah. Actually, I visited a friend's garden on a farm and she wasn't somebody that kind of carried on about being a great gardener, but she had planted mass plantings of mint bush and it was in flower and it was absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. I was so shocked because I just didn't know she, you know, that was part of who she was.
Well, that's a great example of mass planting. Repeat, repeat, repeat.
Yeah.
Visually looks fantastic. And it really lowers the amount of maintenance because you know that selection of plants are done that time of the year.
Right.
Not a higgly piggly, I've got to prune this month, 2 weeks I've got to prune that one. So we did talk about the fences originally, the little surround. I forgot to talk about the plants which would be suitable.
Oh, yes, we did. We didn't discuss that.
So the number one selling plant is Fitinia. And the original one was a robusta, which ends up being quite a large small tree, a large shrub.
Is that the one with the red tips?
Yep.
Yeah, I really hate that. But
I despise it.
Isn't that interesting, I feel like we shouldn't hate plants.
I think
it's against the code.
If I was an adult in the 60s, which I wasn't, I would think that you're on LSD when you're looking at them. They're really damn right ugly and an assault on your senses. So I don't go there. I never recommend them. And they're really – when you get them to the height you want them, between 1.5 and 2 metres, it becomes nearly a fortnightly chore to prune them. I just hate them. Hate them.
Oh, and goodness me, but they are robust. Called robusta and they are robust and they do have those, if you like it, those lovely red tippy leaves.
The robusta was the original one. Now they've bred a whole lot of new ones, super hedge, super red, all these sorts of things. And the most popular is red robin.
Oh,
But if you're on a property and you need a screen quickly hide the neighbours and also to reduce the wind, go for it.
But in
a suburban garden, don't go there. You're just creating so much work for yourself, especially on a Sunday when you want to relax.
Right.
The next one is Pitostrums. And there are many varieties yet again. Silver screen, green pillar, tra-la-la-la-la. Every company has a different brand and copyright and make their own money. They're good. They need, a trim once every 6 weeks to 2 months. But for me, they're that's my phone. Sorry, I don't know where it is. No one rings me. I don't know why. I'll just throw the bag out the door.
I might play some music.
Okay.
Hang on. Well, there we are. That's an unknown track, but it did help us out there. I'm with our garden guru, and we're just finishing off our long discussion about structure in the garden in winter. Ned, we've got a couple more points to go. We were just up to all those beautiful natives that could be used for structure in the garden. So, and as you were saying, the point is pretty much any native shrub will grow here will do a great job, and it will hedge well. It will react quite well to pruning.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Terrific.
So on the break there, Margaret thought it was indicating, Ned, we've got to wind it up. So we're back. Will we continue with the tall shrubs for hedging around perimeters? My favourite, by far, and it's rarely ever done, are bay trees.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so they'll say lovely and evergreen the whole year. They'll stop growing in the winter, but off they go again in the spring, and it can provide a really nice, dense hedge. So that's the bay tree that people use, the dried leaf, and sometimes the fresh leaf for cooking.
Right, yeah. So if you did that, if you used a hedge, you'd have bay leaves coming out your ears, literally.
You could make a couple of $1,000 selling them, yep.
Well, I've actually, a friend gave my daughter, I think, some big bag of when they were pruning their bay trees, and I've been using them ever since.
I picked them or cut the branches, little branches, and hang them in the kitchen and watch them sort of dry. Then I can just pull off the leaves when I'm cooking, making a soup or a casserole.
Oh, it's so organic.
Yeah. Another great plant, and you'll see it a lot around Gyra, Urella, and more often seen in Walker is, I can't remember it now, Ebbington, Eleagnus.
Oh, yes. Now, that's an exotic, isn't it?
Yes.
But it's got a beautiful kind of reverse, different colour on the reverse side.
Yeah, green and a brown on the back. That plant is indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see hedges, 30, 40, 50, 80 years old, still around properties.
And I think there's some at Somers. If you go to the gardens around Somers, there's some really tall Eleagnus, I think. And that's a testimony to how long-lived they are and how robust they are.
And another one, probably the final one, would be olives.
Oh, okay.
So they make a great loose hedge. It also depends on how much you want to prune it, how dense it is, or you can just let it go.
Right.
And people are always sort of excited that, I could grow my own olives. So the thing is, go online, work out what type of olives you wanted. Were they from Africa, Italian, French, or Greek, more importantly Greek, and pick which one you want and then just make a hedge and so you can pick them later. I mean, you've got to do a bit of work to make them edible.
Right, yeah.
But it's a fantastic hedge.
And, of course, I mean, probably a little more expensive than, say, some of the other things.
Plants to buy, you mean? No, you can get them in really... Well, a little pot might cost you $13, $14.
Right, okay. Is there any olive that you know will thrive or do...
They all go here pretty well.
Do they? Yeah. Oh, right.
But probably the most popular is Calamari, which is Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Manzanillo, I think that's Italian by the name of it, the sound of it.
But all of them are ones that you could easily, none of them are going to sort of not cope with our frosts and sort of temperature variations and things.
No, they love the heat and they can handle the cold.
Fabulous.
They're quite wonderful.
Yeah.
So again, about this framework or structure, in the small garden or on the edge, a great analogy is you have your garden is a work of art. It's a painting. So imagine you took that painting or your work of art and went to a framer's. You've got to pick the frame.
That's right.
You wouldn't say, okay, on the left I want it a metal grey, on the top I want a pink plastic.
You just wouldn't
On
do
this
that.
Side you'd have a lovely grain-stained wood. You would be insane.
Yeah.
The frame would think you've had silly pills for a week.
Yeah.
So remember that simplicity. Around the edges.
Right. Fantastic.
Yep. That's about it, Margaret.
Thank you so much.
I think you've wound me up by now.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Ned. And I know we're going to have a little bit of an update on your upgrade of the race course. And also, I imagine as time goes on this year, we're going to be looking very much forward to the New England Garden Festival coming
up.
That'll be in November.
It's bigger and better this year. It's going to be huge.
Yeah, fantastic. But in the meantime, you're going to be working on the entrance, the hedge, and the finish line. So I suppose in terms of home gardening, that would be a priority too. Working out the areas that are most significant to you, and if you haven't thought about how to prioritise where you're going to invest in your garden, that would be a good thought, wouldn't it?
We're following the principle to a T. Repeat plant. The hedges will all be the same. The back hedges, the low hedges, the front.
Yeah, fabulous. Oh, thank you so much. And look, you'll be back in about a fortnight. And we'll look forward to more winter gardening thoughts then, I suppose, about what to do after you've got your evergreen frame in place, or maybe how to look after your evergreen frame. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Margaret. It's been a great time.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.